All right, this is Wednesday, September the 12th. This is a special meeting of the Finance Committee, seeing that there was a holiday on Monday. Present at the start of the meeting, Councilors Rice, Grossman, Laffin, Gentile. Councilor Norton is on the way. Councilor Ciccone, just so that you know, is a little bit under the weather. He's had another procedure with his pickup. And I don't think you can ever classify parts of procedures as being minor, but it's a relatively minor procedure. I talked to him today, and things seem to be going well. He sounded great. He was in good spirits, but that's why he's not here. And I assume that's why he didn't make our last council meeting. So I just wanted on the record that he has a very legitimate excuse. And then Councilor Noel was planning on coming, and I got a call from her late this afternoon. She had something extremely important and totally unexpected occur at work that she has to deal with. So for the record, that's why she will not be here. Okay, so let's get right into the agenda because there's plenty of items. 451-18, it's her honor the mayor requesting authorization to transfer the sum of $33,750 from the youth services grant account to the youth services stipends account for the purpose of reflecting the stipends in the city's payroll system. Maureen?
Mr. Chairman, this, if you had the opportunity to read the memo from Health and Human Services, this is really what I would consider the housekeeping. When we put the budget together, we put the $40,000 for this program in under grants, which is what the way that we've paid these kids in the last couple of years has been. We've worked with Newton Pride and given them the money, and they've actually paid the kids. This year we changed what we did, and so we actually put them onto our payroll for their stipend. So we needed to move that money out of grants into payroll. That's what this is. It's the same program. We've had about 70 kids that participated. We give them a $500 stipend at the end of the summer when they've completed the program.
And is this, this is obviously the kids that were this past summer, not for enough?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is there do people see a need of kids being turned away, or is the money covering pretty much all the kids? It sounds like a great program from what was in the past.
Our goal was to have, a couple of years ago, our goal was to have 100 kids participate, and I think we got very close to that in the beginning, but I don't know that we vetted them as well as we should have, because for them, these kids to commit to 6 weeks of 15 to 20 hours a week is a lot. They're high school kids. And so I think we probably do a better job of vetting them at this point. So we had 70 kids who made it through.
Okay. Questions?
I know we passed the consulting contract about the cultural, how that cultural affairs kind of all tied together. I know that's separate from Newton Trinity Pride. But Newton Trinity Pride, I think, will be evaluated as how everything kind of interacts. But I mean, this is separate.
This is totally separate.
I know that's totally separate. But at one point, I know Jeff Neal was in charge of that. So I think they will be evaluating how Newton Trinity Pride just interacts with all the other nonprofits in the city and everything else.
Yes, I'm sure that will happen.
Okay, thanks.
Yes,
Phil.
So how were they paid before they were on the payroll?
So we worked with Newton Pride, and so if we had whatever it was last year, 60 or 70 kids that completed the program last year, we gave out of our grant fund, we gave Newton Pride the money, and then they wrote the checks for the kids. Because whereas the stipend, we didn't really want to go through the process of putting them all on payroll, and then this year, going back and forth, it was problematic for Newton Pride also. So as much as we thought we were going to have problems with it, so did they. So we ended up paying them through our system in HR.
Okay.
Okay.
It was joined by Councilor Foley, which is on the first item.
Yeah, how do they pay?
They all go through
payroll.
Absolutely, yeah. So we put 300 kids on payroll every summer, and then a few weeks later, we take them all off. So it's a lot of work for HR. And so these kids, it was 70 kids that we put on payroll and then took off.
I think for our reasons, do you keep them on?
Pardon?
You get a lot of reasons for summer help. Do you keep them on? Or you just take them off and then we do them?
I think they, well, they have to make them inactive.
Right. Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I just wanted to know.
Yeah.
Any other questions? All right, we're welcome.
Motion to approve.
Okay. Motion to approve all those in favor.
Okay. Thank you.
You guys, is that for you down there? All right, 460-18, along the mayor requesting authorization to accept and expend the state executive office to energy and environmental affairs in the amount of $48,000 for the purpose of climate resiliency and action planning services to be provided by the Metropolitan Area Planning Council. One thing I just wanted to make sure everyone's clear on, at least I'm clear on, when we discussed this in TF, who was the woman that was there that night?
Claire Rondelli, she's our assistant environmental planner.
All right, she mentioned, she, you know, was talking a little about 78,000. And so if I read everything correctly, then the city is kicking in 24,000, and then there's some money from the grant that we've agreed to. So in all, to get all this work done, it's going to be more, it's going to be 78, is that
so
fair?
It, there's three components to this. One is a climate action plan where $30,000 had been previously approved. Subsequent to that, we got a grant for $48,000 to complete our climate change vulnerability assessment, which we had about 90% done, but wasn't accepted by the state. So we applied for a grant, and lo and behold, they gave us $48,000, which is more than we thought we would get to complete the CCVA. But as part of that, they require us to update our hazard mitigation plan, which expired officially in 2017. So what we did was we combined the $48,000 that we got via the grant and the $30,000 we had already approved for the climate action plan and rolled it into one contract to take care of the rest of the CCDA, complete the hazard mitigation plan, and complete the climate action plan.
Okay.
And they're all somewhat related.
Okay. So we had already approved this for an extra $30,000.
Yeah.
Questions? As I mentioned at the meeting in PF, can you just, I now know where they're located, the MACC. They're on, what are they on?
Temple Place.
Yep. I know where they're located. It's what I said at TF is I wanted to just get a little better understanding. I've known and been aware of the work of the MACC for several years, but it just, and I'm not saying that this is a bad thing, I'm just saying that they have become more prominent in the roles that they seem to play in the work that they do. So I was just trying to get a better understanding. I hear that they're truly a state agency, a quasi-state agency, and just anything you could fill in on that.
So they're a regional planning agency, and for the purposes of municipalities, we can go to them and get quotes for bids on work, which in a case like this, they, for example, they completed 82 hazard mitigation plans in the last 5 years, so they kind of know that business pretty well.
So was the region the entire state? Because they did some work, and it's not like it's Metro West or anything. It seems like they're all over.
They can work all over the place. So they act like a consulting firm. They're a pretty big operation with lots of divisions. So, and they get some of their funding through the state of Massachusetts, and they get other funding through communities through work that they do.
So is this, am I missing something? Have they always been this big, or is it fair to say that they've grown over the last?
I don't know if they've grown, but They probably have overtime.
I mean, occasionally you hear them weighing in on, you know, some kind of an issue, but as I said, it's like every time that there's some work done, it seems like they're involved. I also mentioned that we have a little dispute going on with LaSalle and some lights. Some of you may have heard of it. And our historic commission denied LaSalle's request for a hardship for the light pole, and the city, which I very much appreciated, appealed, and the appeal went to the MACC. So it's almost like they're in a, you know, in a judicial, they were serving as a judge and jury on the appeal, which was, so that's why I started to say, see, these folks seem to do everything. Do you have any idea how many employees or anything?
I don't, off the top of my head.
Okay. You
hit the website up. What do I know?
You answered the question. You like, I also had asked if there are other companies that do this work, and it was, the answer was that there's many, many companies. So I asked them, see, you know, why MACC, you just give the rationale. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they are the best to do it, but, I'll just take everybody at their word. What are all those colors?
That's all the colors represent their territory, and there's eight jurisdictions that's a different color.
So
do we have a member from the city on it? It says we have members on it.
Yes, we do. Yes.
We have
a representative on their board.
That work here at City Hall?
Correct.
They've been around for
three. Yes.
James is on it?
He's a representative for the city.
But so they do have a
defined area.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And our jurisdiction includes
the inner core,
Newton,
yep.
Boston, Brookline, Watertown, up to Saugus and Lynn, Medford, Alden, so that area.
Any other questions? Because I have one other, but I want to get somebody else's down.
I think I've won.
Yeah.
The only thing I was wondering is why we got rejected the first time around. And the package made note of the fact that the state was requesting more community engagement be undertaken, but I was wondering if you could
talk
a little bit more about the scope of work that was done up until that point and
sort
of the scope of work that's remaining.
So when we did the vulnerability assessment, we did a pretty heavy process internally with departments to determine where we were vulnerable in the city as it related to climate change. So it was more of an interdepartmental thing. We didn't do enough kind of public outreach on it, and that's what they said we needed to do more of, and also involve the city council at some level as well. So we now have a docket item before the city council to take up the CCDA. So we will appear before the council and hopefully get voted on.
And will the NHPC be the group?
They'll present.
They'll come and present to us based
correct.
On the work that they do, and essentially from now through completion?
Yeah, so they for the CCDA, they've done most of the work. The plan's pretty much done at this point. It's just that outreach piece that wasn't done.
Okay.
So we're going to take that on.
They didn't come in the first time.
They did not, no.
Okay. Yeah.
Andrew, just to round that out, I think it's reasonable to know that the work was completed on the draft plan, climate vulnerability assessment and plan, at the very end of the Warren administration. So in the shift, I think this got put down for a while. I mean, we had run a certain course, and there hadn't been time to do a community outreach plan at that time. But I think it's important also to know that there's been a climate action planning group assembled. It involves members of the Management Commission, folks like Peter Bearer, as well as in-house staff, and now the NHPC, that have been working since last spring, you know, to try to round out the rest of this report. And the two things, I think very close to putting out a calendar of presentations and events and when you're going to come before public facilities
correct.
And other things.
to both introduce the vulnerability assessment and hazard mitigation plan of how we're going to respond to working storms kind of piece, and as well the mitigation piece, which is about how we can do better to prevent, reduce our vulnerability and between our gaps and things like that. But I believe that we're going to roll all of it into the public process.
Yeah, we've identified a number of workshops that we're going to be holding so this fall, actually.
Well, I think it's actually good news that the state's paying attention and kind of insisting upon the fact that they're the elders. Normally you say, you wonder if they even pay attention to that kind of stuff, but they're obviously just here. In the memorandum that came from Jennifer, I don't know if it was, on page 5, procedures of general expectations, it's on number 4, it says, the City of Newton has identified Jennifer Steele as the primary point of contact within municipal government to serve as the liaison. Secondary points of contact, the City has identified Jonathan Canta, Alina Brown has lead point of contact for the DCAP, DTOC, and Eric Olson is the lead point of contact for intern related staff. So I don't know Alina, but I know that Jonathan and Eric are not city employees. Is that something that we normally do, that non city employees or contact people? So, why is that?
So this is the group that Councilor Crosby referred to, which is kind of a climate action working group. And these are folks that are experts in those particular aspects that will help inform the climate action plan. There's a lot of kind of data analysis involved in that. So we wanted to be clear as to who was providing what information. Jennifer is the overall point of contact, but as I said, there are kind of multiple layers of this thing.
So I guess I'll be a little more specific.
Yep.
From a policy standpoint, I'm not questioning anybody's credentials.
Right.
I know Jonathan and I've seen Eric and Pat and so forth. I'm not questioning their credentials. But I don't remember ever seeing a situation where we have a project like this, we're paying money, we're paying for the intern, and we're not having a City of Newton staff employee be the point of contact. That's what I'm asking about.
So Jennifer is the primary point, but there are others involved in the project. I think that if that's not clear, it should have been clearer in here, but she is the lead city contact on this.
So why wouldn't we have City of Newton employees be contact for these other tasks?
Because, again, there are pieces of data analysis that were done previously by the folks in this group, and I think that we wanted to call them out specifically as individuals that also could provide information. So I think that's why we put in their name.
So is this something that we normally do?
But I don't know if it's something that we normally do.
This group has kind of specialized knowledge that they've been working on, so I think we included their names just so that they would be clearly identified who they were in case they provided some information.
But when someone is a point of contact, to me, that implies a little bit of supervisory work. And I'm questioning the policy of having non-city employees supervising people or playing this role. Again, it's not that they don't have the credentials in the field, it's just not something that I've typically seen done, and I'm not sure it's a good policy. Councilor Crossley?
It might help if you wanted to get a little into the weeds of defining some people to do this, to describe what's involved with these sort of sub-points of contact.
I can say that, first of all, this effort would not be possible without the volunteers who are, it wouldn't be possible for us to complete it in this time frame, even to get to a level of completion without the volunteer expertise we had since the spring. Second, Eric Olson is a professor in graduate studies, and this is one of his graduate students who applied for this position. I think that's kind of why he didn't do that connecting role, although he's taking her, there's agreement among the group about what the task needs to be in order to get to the other side. So he may be a point of contact, but the whole group is discussing all of what needs to be done in every piece of this project. So I don't know if Brian, if you want to add to that, but it's clear to me, and I think to the whole group, that the effort wouldn't be possible for this $78,000. It's so for the effort and the level to which we want to be able to have concrete measures coming from this study if we didn't have this expertise and these people added into the group.
All right, Marty, I don't know if anybody else wants to comment. I guess my only response to that is, and I say this in a positive way, there are things that have come in front of us over the last 10 years where your body of expertise would be an extremely good fit, where you could be a contact person, okay? I mean, I would be perfectly comfortable because there could be some issue on architecture or design or whatever, and you don't do that. So I don't know why this is being done here.
I'm not sure what you're saying you don't do.
We don't have non-city employees as points of contact and supervising work that's being done. We don't do that. We do it for obvious reasons. So I don't think it's, I think from a policy standpoint, you've never served in that capacity. There were certain things that have come before us that I know as much as anybody on, but I haven't expected to be like a point of contact. That's not my role. And I don't think members of boards and commissions should be playing that role either. So maybe I'm in the minority on it, but I don't think it's a good policy. And I think that we need to be careful. Anybody else have a comment? We can.
It doesn't function that way. I think the goal here was to identify some folks that had specialized knowledge that may be contacting an APC with information. I think it's poorly kind of worded in there.
Okay. Anyone else? Yeah.
I was just going to respond that if we have individuals who really do have a particular expertise in this and really in all of our different boards and commissions, I think one of the things that I've heard from people in the city quite a bit is, you know, why don't you guys take more advantage of the experts who we do have in the city? So many talented professionals who have so much to offer, and you just say you don't really tap into that, and perhaps this is an example of a place we are, it does sound like the volunteers are really helping to fill in gaps. I think we all kind of recognize how extremely stretched so much of our resources are. I've heard Ms. Brown's name. I don't know her personally, but I have a little bit more familiarity with the other two members of the public who are listed here, and I'm comfortable with them being part of it, and especially knowing that the primary point of contact is Jennifer Steele, and that's kind of superseding by the formal name of the group.
It's the Climate Action Working Group, I would say.
And obviously, Mr. Beasley is quite involved as well, mm-hmm. from what we're seeing. So I personally am comfortable with it, but I don't certainly take the point.
I don't disagree with anything that you said. I think the more we tap in, we all agree that the more we tap into the expertise that's in this city, the better. I just think that there's a line. And I have never seen a non-city employee listed in this state in a grant, in any kind of a project, moving forward with it listed as a point of contact. That's all that I'm saying. Yes.
I haven't either. So it sounds like what they probably just should have done is left Jennifer Steele's name on there and not had the other people. So I understand the reason for, you know, why we don't do that and why we haven't seen it, because then what about legally? Are we liable? What if that person, you know, ran away with the money or something? So I understand why you're saying that, and we've never seen it. So it sounds like these people are going to be, I know all of these people, and they're amazing, and we're lucky to have them. So it sounds like just the forms that just said Jennifer Steele. Okay. And
I'm fine with it, and I'm happy to be fine. Okay.
And I have a feeling it may not be done again.
Well, I wanted to raise it, and again, it's not a knock on any of the individuals, because they assume it's just kind of like this line of demarcation of what all of our responsibilities are, and that's all that I'm questioning. Yeah.
I will be happy to check with Buddha tomorrow and just get to see if we ought to really be changing the language a little bit before you vote at the full board next week, if we need to do anything, because I do think the question of liability is probably valid. So we may need to just change this language and just have Jennifer and then a second person. Or the person that works with Jennifer.
Yep.
So that everything is certain that he's going through the city before it gets to the other people.
The person who raised it, I would be very appreciative if you would do that, but in the meantime, I also don't want to hold it up. So if it's okay with the committee, I think it'd be fine. This is where you sometimes, you know, will vote it subject to second call, because we may hear that it's fine, and so bang, it goes through. Or if we have to make a slight amendment, we could also do that. But I don't want to hold them, I don't want to hold the money up, if that's okay. All right, so can I get a motion to that effect? Motion subject to second call. Who subject to second call? Anybody all in favor? Okay, we've been joined by Councilor North. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, 453-18, the Honorable Mayor requesting authorization to accept and expend the Green Communities competitive grant in the amount of $248,734 awarded by the Department of Energy Resources Green Communities Division for a number of energy-related projects.
All right, thank you very much. First of all, I just want to give credit where credit's due. This is a lot of hard work by Bill Ferguson in my office. In working with a number of different departments to craft what was ultimately awarded to Green Communities. Huge success. Many communities do not have near the level of success that we do with the amount of grant money that is received. Every year they tell us it's going to get more and more competitive, and every year it does, but knock on wood, our grants tend to be on the high end of what is awarded to different communities. And I attribute a lot of that to Bill Ferguson really working hard with Green Community year-round to determine what types of programs, where they think they're headed, what they'd like to see. So as you can see in the attached, there are a number of different projects here. We have lighting at Newton North High School, interior and exterior. Some modest weather window weatherization efforts in the War Memorial Auditorium here at City Hall. $10,000 towards an electric vehicle charging station that is going to go in City Hall, not in, but outside of City Hall. $10,000 grant for a plug-in hybrid vehicle that is going to be going over to the police department. And a $10,000 grant towards a Bolt long-range electric vehicle that is going to go, I believe it's scheduled to go into the carpool at City Hall. And then $89,000 towards the Bowen Elementary School LED lighting and controls retrofit. So the items that are energy savers, meaning the lighting and weatherization projects, we anticipate to yield savings of approximately $50,000 to $60,000 a year, with a total kilowatt hour reduction of 330,000. which is the equivalent of 33 homes in Newton going black, essentially. This is all grant money. We're not asking for any matches. We're just asking to accept and authorize to spend.
When will the work be done?
As soon as we have authorization from the city council.
Do we have to do something?
No, that was something else, I think that was a different one where it has to be done by October.
That's the next one. But this does have a deadline as well. If folks remember, Green Communities, every year you have to complete the work that was granted the previous year before you can submit for the next one. That being said, these are pretty easy projects. They're all queued up and ready to go, and the deadline really is like April for us to be done. We'll be done long before that.
So a few questions here. Good information. First, on North High School, you're North, right?
Yep.
But it's a new high school, new building.
Mm-hmm.
Is this a replacement of existing equipment that was put in, or is this an upgrade of what was put in when they built the school?
So
what is the purpose of what? Why do we need that much money to move on a couple of years into the school being built?
So LED technology was essentially cutting edge at the time that Newton North High School was built in 2010. Mm-hmm. Specifically for large scale institutions, a lot of the ballast systems and the like were not necessarily completely reliable. Mm-hmm. But I think more importantly, it was really more of a financial decision. They were quite expensive at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So the decision was made not to do LED lights. The good news, I think it's good news, is that the lights that were installed recently reached the end of their useful life, so they're starting to die, so we're actually retrofitting with LEDs, so they would have needed to be replaced anyway.
Okay.
In this case, the LEDs also have benefits not only for energy, but color rendering, dimmability, and the quality of light in the classrooms is something that we're hearing straight across the board. It is very, very nice for teaching environments.
So then, moving down a little bit more, so these vehicles, so we're talking about two vehicles that are listed in here. Did we budget for those? And then this is like taking off some of the money we budgeted for these vehicles, or are these vehicles we have to buy now that we may not have budgeted for?
These are vehicles that we had already planned on procuring, which helped us reduce that cost.
Did we budget for them knowing this money was coming, anticipating it was coming, or did we?
We budgeted in the full amount through our fleet replacement program that is managed through DPW. In this case, it will ultimately allow Jim McGonigal, in working with the mayor's office, to spread that money a little further.
Okay. So
does that mean we may end up with another electric vehicle? Well, hybrid, is that what you're saying, or is this an offset? Well, we don't know yet.
No, the cost of the overall
cost. Well, we're in the process of buying three or four vehicles right now, and I know that we're going to sell them looking for a few more in the course of this year. So we're trying to buy as many electric vehicles as we
can. Okay, who was that? Anyone? You.
Happy to move it.
This one, so what is a vehicle charging station? So once this one is comes on board, how many will that make in the city and where are they?
Well, that's a bit of a loaded question. There's a lot of charging stations in the city. Owned by the city is a little different. So owned by the city, we have four out here, two are offline right now because we're getting ready actually to retrofit the entire one. I think that's here. Yeah, back here. So we're getting ready to retrofit that. We're going to be installing five total new heads. We have the one down below here, so I think at the end we're going to end up with six with the capacity to expand from there. But we're also looking at dual head capacity.
Bottom one up at Newton South?
At Newton South, yes. We have Newton South as well, and we're also EV charger ready at a number of locations. And then we also have the ones over at Elliott Street, over at 52 Elliott Street.
So I get asked this question, okay? So the ones that the city owns, if I understand, there's approximately four here, there's one up at Newton South, and there's one or two over at Elliott Street?
Two heads, yeah.
And how does that work as far as public access? Is a member of the public allowed to use any of those?
Yes.
Including Elliott Street?
Yes.
And from a cost standpoint, is there any charge to do that, or is it free?
They pay for the power.
No,
they
do.
Who pays for the power?
So they do pay for the power.
The person charging, unless they're charging a city vehicle, they're... Yeah,
right.
Through ChargePoint, which is our software system. So you can, which Emily's about to show you.
Show you.
Sorry, Councilor Norton.
You just hold that up, and then I get charged for the electricity.
I have one of those.
How much does it cost you to charge it up?
I don't even know.
You don't know?
Because it's so little. $50.
Really?
But I don't fill it up because it can take so long. My car has 250-mile range, which would take, at those stations, it would take several hours.
Yeah.
So I just charge at night at my house most of the time.
Okay. I just drew.
Yeah. It's less than that one.
Okay. Any other questions? Councilor Norton moved it. All those in favor? Okay, 6-0. All right. The next item is 473-18, the Rod of the Mayor requesting authorization to appropriate $61,423 from the Energy Stabilization Fund and authorize the acceptance and expenditure of $138,521 in matching rebate funds from Eversource for the purpose of upgrading LED lighting and controls at Eversource High School and Bowen Elementary School. So this was amended in public facilities to $50,463 and $149,481 because, as I understand it, we got an increase in the grant.
Yeah.
So are these the same numbers that we should be using? The same number, or is there any change since CF?
There's not any change since
CF. So when we make a motion, if somebody could move it as amended, okay? Is it you, Josh?
It's me. So this one is, I think, relatively simple. We're asking for $50,000. We're asking to have the City Council appropriate and authorize us to spend $50,463 to go towards almost $200,000 lighting retrofit program at the Bowen Elementary School and Newton South High School. So essentially, we spend $50,000 to get $200,000 worth of work with a less than 2-year payback. Right up there, as close to a no-brainer as you get. The part of the reason why we receive such a rebate is because we have a track record working through Rise Engineering and Eversource for being able to get work done quickly. Eversource has increased incentives for communities that can turn around work fast, essentially. And I think a lot of that, it comes down to, like any big corporation, they have incentives and targets, and they can look to us as they get further along through the fiscal year and say, Newton is one of those communities that can turn something around quickly. A lot of it also, again, credit to Bill Ferguson, doing a lot of the front work and cleaning things up ahead of time so that when opportunities like this become available, we can move quickly.
So is this work done actually by Rise Engineering, or are they the ones that will do all this?
So Rise Engineering actually does the engineering for the work. They subcontract with electrical contractors. For example, Your Electrical Solution or a Daigle Electric even. Offshore Electric, there's a number of them in the area that do work with them. And they're the ones that actually do the work in the field.
Bill supervises them?
Bill supervises them.
Okay. Yep. Questions?
If I can just jump in, this is the one that we have to set aside by October 31st,
yep.
Which is why Eversource gave us even more money. Originally, I think we were getting about $60,000 or $70,000, and then they kept increasing it because there's certain clients who are going to be able to turn on projects.
Council's crossing all right, Lavin requesting a review of proposed amendment to city code section 17-3 19 governing filing fees for grant of location petitions for placement of wireless communication facilities and poles constructed primarily for wireless communication purposes. Who's picking this up? Alan? Alan, I haven't really said too much, and I voted against this, I'll explain in a minute, but I haven't really said much in the PF, that it's not my committee, but if this is, I'm at least the chair of the committee, and I wanted to say that I wouldn't have looked this on my worst enemy to look at his attitude. So I appreciate everything that you've done.
Thank you.
So, why don't you tell us about the fee?
We tried to come up with a cost-based fee for wireless applications to use the public ways. I think the $35 fee, you know, has been there forever. It's not necessarily cost-based under any reasonable standard. So what we did was we looked at the kinds of tasks that city employees would be expected to carry out in reviewing these applications, processing them, so from the beginning to the approval stage. We got a committee. The committee came up with labor rates for different departments. We discussed the amount of time, you know, for these different tasks. We identified the primary tasks. I don't think we identified every single task that could have been included. We also limited the cost to labor rates times time. We didn't include any loaders or adders for things like fringe benefits or the administrative costs, which sometimes are included in cost studies. We came up with a figure that was around $655. We rounded it to $500. We made that a per application fee, or actually it's per location. So, we didn't do a cost analysis of, say, multiple locations as part of the same application. So the fee that went through the Public Facilities Committee was $500 per location. And that would apply across the board, no matter how many locations were involved.
So,
one of the reasons we did direct costs was A, to be conservative, and also I think at the FCC there have been some developments there that are focused on these kind of direct costs. So this was a way to try to fit ourselves into what we felt was going to happen at the federal level. The other thing we did look at fees that were being charged by other communities. So we tried to do a comparative analysis. You know, how does this compare to more recently enacted fees in other places? And we found this was kind of in the middle of the range. There were some that were $1,000. There were some that were $300, $500. You know, there was since we don't know what their cost basis was, we can't do like a real one-to-one comparison. It's just kind of a sense of reasonableness. But we did the cost study, so I think that's the real basis for it.
And so I know it's not necessarily recurring going forward, but for instance, is your time here tonight somehow been taken into consideration?
No.
Your time, how many times was the SDS? At least five times?
Yeah.
I'm sure that wasn't taken in.
No.
My point is that I don't think it goes far enough, and that's what the discussion that I wanted to have to find him. So, anyway. Any other points you want to make?
Yeah. While we've been going through this process, there's still been some dockets at the FCC kind of moving parallel. And the FCC...
So don't ruin my cause.
Yeah. So it ruined my week, let me tell you. The FCC came out with what they call a draft order. They're going to act on the draft order on September 26th. And in the draft order, they said a presumptively reasonable application fee is $500 for 1 to 5 locations that are part of the same application. So we're in the ballpark. At least as to the single application for one location. Nothing has happened yet, but and those are only presumptions. If a municipality can show that their actual costs are higher than the FCC presumption, then that'll be okay. So, but in the FCC, as I said, they focused on direct costs. They're not giving municipalities a lot of leeway to add things in, but it's a little bit uncharted. We took a conservative approach, and that's where we came out.
All right, Councilor Laughlin, and then Councilor Foley.
Thank you. Councilor Crossley has been meaning that he's done an amazing job, even though he says he doesn't understand what the details, but I think he's gotten quite a bit of the details. And Alan has been amazing. This has been a tedious process. For those of you who don't know what we're talking about, because I'm listening to talk and I know, and I'm realizing. So, you know when there's a cell tower?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there used to just be cell towers. Now that's because everybody has so many devices, they need these wireless, they're like tiny cell towers, and they want them, and they came to public facilities to get grants of location for them, like in front of every, they're going to have them everywhere. So, we couldn't say no, because the FCC would tell us we can't say no, but what we can do is we can require, we can have design guidelines, we can have a fee, we can tell them where they can put them where they can't, well, we can suggest that they can put them, so that's been put together. I actually would have rounded up, and I think if there's a community that could prove that it costs more to do things here, I think we could do that. So if anybody, so can I just ask you for $500, when they put that in there, that's their suggestion, that's what they need to do, sorry.
The FCC? What the FCC is doing, they're putting out costs that they presume are reasonable. So you can use that as like a safe harbor, but If you do a cost study and your cost, you can show that your costs are substantially higher.
And
if a wireless carrier challenges it, then there'll be something that has to get resolved. But yeah, so municipalities can definitely have fees that are higher than these presumed values.
So we've already proven that our fees are higher by 65, and we didn't include, as you said,
their
sign here, never mind all the other
things. No voters and no other, there were other administrative fees, I think that was.
Yeah, yeah, no.
So, I would go for more. These are, and in other countries, they say there are proven medical issues with being that close. You wouldn't be that close to the tower, but now they're putting them on poles in front of people's houses. So,
yeah. A point of information to that, though, so that everybody on this team knows too. We're told over and over and over again that the radio frequency emissions are a tiny fraction of a fraction of 1% of what's allowed. I don't know what that means. I mean, I really don't know what that means. But it's even our consultants there, and we're not allowed to discuss that as a
We're not, but in Europe, who's quicker than us?
I just
wanted to make
sure everybody understands.
Right. So even if it's 1.1%, when you start to put them everywhere, it all, it, it, you know, filed on
it.
Anyway, I think that we should get as much money as at least we're spending on staff time.
Good. We need council
to
vote.
So
I have a few things. One, I totally agree with Council Lappin on that one. If, like, if we were in business and we set our cost at such and such, and then we said, well, we're going to charge less, we wouldn't be in business long. So for America, I agree completely. I don't know if we can reset that number here or if we're just not, you know, go along with it. But Council, just like you mentioned,
we
have, you were opposed to
it. Just to answer that, you have the, this committee has the right to make a recommendation if it wants of a higher fee, and then it will settle it at the floor of the board. That's
okay. So you made a comment in the beginning that you weren't for this. What's your rationale for that?
I voted against this because I do agree with the Council last and half of her statement that, you know, you can't say no. I understand you can't always say no, but you don't always have to say yes either. And I find it very, very frustrating that these wireless carriers, it's almost like they intimidate their way into, bring in their experts. Every meeting that I was at, they had two pretty high-priced lawyers sitting right there that they don't have any problems paying, you know, to make their point of view. And I do think that there are times when these things are inappropriate, shouldn't be in a certain location, but we allow them. And I think that, and this isn't being critical, I know why the committee settled where they did, but I would not have given as much leeway as we did. I would have tightened things up, and I would have made some decisions that I felt were in everybody's best interest, starting with our constituents, and said, sue me if you want. You don't like our decision on a particular, sue me and we'll see what happens. And then we'll go from there. So that's why I voted against it.
Okay.
Not because of any of the work that anybody did. They did thorough work, but they spent a lot of time on it.
Mm-hmm.
I just would have gone further.
So to expand upon that a little bit more, how big are these towers? Like, are they...
They're little towers.
They're units. You have to stick out a pole.
So they're small.
They're like, they act like towers.
Okay.
I mean, it's like living next
to them. So it's not something that you're around.
Yeah.
I think I heard you guys talking about
it. Come on, I'm using poles.
I'm young.
Okay, so
could be
but we're not going to, like, all of a sudden start getting calls saying, what the heck are you doing all the pole hole in my...
No.
Nobody has called us when, because there's these giant boxes on the top of the rocket pole. You look up there, there's those giant boxes, you can't call
them.
You
ever get calls?
People
look up a lot.
Correct me if I'm wrong, this all kind of started on a request up in your ward, wasn't it? And when some people got, wasn't it on Dudley Road, when some people got wind of it, and that kind of is what triggered this whole thing.
And he said no.
So half about pole.
No.
So half about pole.
What happened? Is there anything
else? Yeah, they had to find another
location. Right, but did they do it?
No, they found another location.
They
were in agreement with them. And to say no on that one, and we put on another location, the design guidelines or whatever you want to include in the standards actually give us more doubt to be able to say no.
Right.
Because here we have set for, you know, some standards that we want people to comply with. We don't want these things hanging over the public way. We don't want them in front of somebody's house, so that's what we want them to be at a certain location on a pole and so on and so
mm-hmm.
forth. So that, it actually will help us to say no.
And the chairman of the public attorney will attest to the fact that this is as tight as we can do. I kept saying, can we do this? And legally,
right.
There are things we can't. We are doing as much as we can possibly do.
Yeah, well, not totally finished yet, just a little bit. So,
okay.
Are you proposing an amendment to move it up or?
He
does,
and I will.
Okay, so I would do the fee up anyway. I wouldn't.
Okay.
So the other thing is, so this council does such a good job on this one. I've been knocking on Manny's door for 2 years about the fee for special permits, which are not related to this. But I'm not getting this is good attention. This is a little matter, but we have developers coming in with multi-million-dollar projects that are tying up our planning department, and we charge a $700 fee. So I'm not sure why we're not going after more money. I have a doctorate item on that, so I want to put that as a little commercial here.
Well,
saying, you know,
you can check with the chair of land use.
I know we have utilities, but they can drag it
over. If some reason the chair doesn't plan on taking it up anytime soon, we could take it up here and we could make the recommendation for them to act on, and then we could get it to the full council because they know it's been here for a while.
Right.
And it should be more. Even if we somehow, it's involved because you don't necessarily want to hit somebody that's putting a kitchen on, but when you're talking about, we might want to start that discussion, but we can take it up here. We don't have to wait for them.
That was just my little commercial on that one, but I support Council 11, 453, raise the fee.
750. Yes. Who else? Anybody else?
I see you there. So, I'm happy if you all want to raise the price. I hope that you will be able to a reasonable level so that I can get the public facilities in to do. I would be the first right away at the cost that Alan has already
said, for example, if it's 50 or 55. Yeah. If you go higher than that, it means that the petition, and it's a big jump from 35, so I just want to be careful, because I don't want to delay this, because there's some other things coming down the pipe at us.
I don't want,
we
don't need to delay it. I
would suggest 750 because Alan's already got it to one point, and in his testimony here tonight, he mentioned there were no loaders aren't in that. There are other administrative fees, so 750 is kind of a nice round number. I prefer to go to 1,000, but I think that'll be problematic with the committee and others. So I'd rather get it to 750 and hopefully there'd be agreement. So. So, do we want to dock it an item to do a review of those fees?
Yes, I would like to want to do all of that in CF, and of course here too, but it's me anyway, part of, we have some out-of-state ordinances that are about sort of engineering protocols and so forth. One of the items we need to dock it related to wireless is the ordinance, the grant of location, which has the language in it, which is out of date. And that applies to all grants of location. And then we can take up the fees from applying to all the different grants of location. It would be $25 or $35. Absolutely,
we could
do it.
We'd
like to
do it.
That's on the list.
Okay. And well, why don't we talk about something finance, public facilities and finance, to review the current grant the location fees. I mean, there's a lot of fees to look at, but why don't we just pick up and get into what we can while we can. I mean, because those things are happening every day. $35 is extremely low. So why don't we do that? If you're in agreement, I'll do it tomorrow. All right. Anyone else have a comment or a question before I get back to Council 11? Go ahead.
Question for Alan.
Can you justify
750?
I'll put it this way. Yeah, yes. Okay, you have tell the lawyer what side of the case it's on, and
you can. Okay, well, and Lou can help.
Who am I representing?
That's
a fair question. I mean, one of the reasons why we backed this thing down to $500 is we don't have any history reviewing these applications. We kind of scoped it out, we talked about it, we came up with what we felt was reasonable, but it's not based on a historic track record of how much time it actually takes to review these things. So we never looked at how much time would it take to look at five locations that are part of the same application. We didn't do that. So one of the reasons of keeping it a little bit lower was to reduce the likelihood of the tree being challenged. The higher it is, the more likely that someone will challenge it. We now have the FCC telling us that they're probably going to say 500 is okay for 1 to 5 locations, part of the same application. We go above that. We really have to look at the numbers and how we got there and whether we can defend it. And certainly, you know, we can put it in adders, we'll jack up that number, we'll make it higher. I know with the utilities, when they do utility relocations, they have loading factor that is, you know, like 1,000%. I mean, it just doubles the cost because their loaders are so high.
So when you say loaders, specifically you're talking about increased wages for some reason?
No. What's a load? It could be people have a salary, but then they have health insurance.
Oh,
they have
pension contributions.
Yeah, there's some overheads that you can factor that kind of build on the labor rate. So it might be for every $100 somebody was paid, there's another $30 in expenses that the city incurs. So that's pretty low, might be 30%.
And that's good money to pay the city council for the labor rate.
No, but seriously, I mean, if we can, that's the benefits, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we don't know if the FCC is going to consider that a direct cost. I mean, it was just isn't clear. But,
I would think they're $500 for average community. So I would think we're more expensive to work here. I mean, it's the same amount. So I think we can justify that.
The FCC is about to tell us that we have to consider batch.
Well, I don't know.
They're going to say you have to consider batch applications.
So I
think my first question was just answered. So we're not considering the 750 for 1 to 5. We're considering it for every single individual application.
So now, yeah.
Okay. And then my other question was if one of these companies were to challenge our fee, how is the judgment determined as to what the ultimate fee is? Who has that authority?
We'll see what the FCC comes up with. I mean, it's yeah, if they set up a process, whether it goes to court, you know, versus the FCC. I think most likely it will go to court, which is going to claim that the fee was excessive. And then there'll be some standards applied to it. It'll be reviewed by a court, some fact finder. And you know, you have to have your ducks in a row. You have to have your cost basis. If you're going to go to a higher fee, you have to have a cost basis for it. And so that's really the...
So the FCC is not the adjudicator necessarily.
I think we'll probably go to court, but I'd like to wait and see what the FCC actually adopts, if they say something on that.
Okay.
In most cases, if there's some violation of federal law, it's up in court.
Now, if the FCC has put out guidance that $500 is reasonable, it would then be reasonable to assume we probably wouldn't receive an adjudication that's less than $500.
No, I mean, if the FCC says $500 for one application that covers 1 to 5 locations, and you charge $500, no one's gonna challenge that.
But folks, I'm just wondering if they say 1 to 5 and we're saying, you know, 750 for each one, are we in effect saying, you know, 750 times 5 and then they're, you know, we're fighting it out on that basis?
Yeah, that'll get challenged. Or some carrier is going to say, look, you know, we don't want to incur the expense of a lawsuit. Have a nice day. We're not going to build in your community. We're not going to build out.
Well, that's the
They threaten that all the time.
If you add 30% just to the labor hours and don't even get into the administrative costs that are not in here, you put the you're like $850 to $900 if you just add the benefits. So I think it's pretty defensible. Is there a motion?
No, you can't do it. Good idea. I don't mind
it, anybody. So there's a motion to amend the item to increase the fee to $750. Any other discussion? All in favor of that motion? Okay, 6-0. Any discussion on the main item? Yes.
I will just appreciate it for the record. A lot of conferences for the committee council and then all through the council about how hookah booty was for, but specifically about the numbers. I think your example that you just gave is a good one, that you add 3% of the reasonable amount for benefits than what the fee would be. So in addition to what's in here in this memo, I actually restructured this memo to the 655 that we
John and I will put something together, all right? And we'll get it out.
Is there an approximation of what the loader would be?
Because
that would be, that'd be really helpful if we had some the numbers.
We can do that. All right, any other comments, questions? All right, can I have a motion on the main item as amended? Motion's made as amended. All those in favor? Okay, 6-0. Carolyn,
Thank you, Carolyn.
452-18, Your Honor, the Mayor requesting authorization to accept and extend the Mass CEP Recycling IQ grant the amount of $40,000 awarded by the Massachusetts Department of Environmental Protection to be used to address recycling contamination.
Hello.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. It's all yours.
So this is $40,000 to go toward education to the public. It includes 2 citywide mailings.
Have you been before finance before?
I don't think so.
Does anybody know what it is? Do you know?
I'll introduce myself. I'm Juanita Trabert. I work for CCW. I am the Director of Sustainable Materials Management, and I manage all things trash, recycling, household hazardous waste, and the recycling center.
Okay, thank you.
So this is a prescriptive program from MassDEP called the Recycling IQ program, or Recycling IQ Kit. There's been about 15 other municipalities that have implemented it so far, and it has been proven to reduce contamination of curbside recycling, which is a big problem nationwide because single stream recycling, a lot of folks are confused about it. And it's not straightforward, it's not simple. The stream of materials that have come into residents' homes in the past 10 to 15 years are dramatically different than they were back then. And so education has not been consistent enough for folks to understand clearly what should go in and what should not go in, and the result is contamination, making matters worse. Many of you probably have seen articles in mainstream media about the global recycling crisis, the global recycling markets crisis that started in China, or started with China changing their policies. So on the East Coast, all of the haulers for waste and recycling are feeling a lot of financial pain from the market chaos that has been going on since January. Waste Management has been charging the City of Newton an excess residue fee for our recycling since November of last year, and that's approximately $7,000 a month. So this program is something that MassDEP worked on over the past 3 years, even before the global markets crisis, to have a tool for communities to use to go out, have uniform educational messaging. They did all the research with a national nonprofit group to figure out messaging that was the most effective. And so this is citywide mailing. It is banners on fences, at schools and parks, of a robust social media campaign. And then there's also a component where city staff go out to the curb and provide feedback on individual cards, which again, has the research has been done that shows that that is the most effective way to have long-lasting behavior change and to reduce recycling contamination.
So can you talk about those, a little more about those, and also education, but can you talk a little bit more about exactly how the first size audits are coming out?
Yes, so it is planned out ahead of time. We have used data to determine target areas that have high contamination. And we have several data points that we determine that from. And so there's three areas that we are figuring out the exact routes that we're going to walk, but they're approximately 700 households each, and so that's 2,100 households approximately that we will walk a consistent route for 8 weeks and provide feedback at the curb. What that looks like is walking by the cart that's out in the morning and coordinating with our hauler ahead of time so that they're doing that route last, so they don't come and pick it up first. But we walk the curb and or walk the street and lift the lid of the cart, look to see if there's contamination in the recycling. If there is contamination, there's a card. And so we mark down on the card what materials are found in the bin that should not be there. And then there's a little wire twist tie that you twist tie to the handle of the cart. So myself, I have, I'm in the process of hiring one staff person right now, and then I have a part-time staff person, and then we are having the DCW Executive Administrator Tim Rissy come out to do the curbside audit with us.
Okay. Questions? This would be as popular as a repo man.
So my first job, you've heard this already, after college, was as a recycling coordinator for the city of Burlington, Vermont, where I got to do just that. And I can attest, because people were very concerned, oh, you belong to my trash, but once you're out in the street, there for the pickings. So it's totally legal to do this, and it definitely worked. And people were often grateful, because they really didn't know. So it's like having someone tell you, oh, because we have the same thing, check off, oh, this doesn't go in. So I think that this will be effective, I think it's absolutely worth it. And this contamination is costing us money. So, I'm all in favor.
Is there a question then?
No, I'm just saying that. Earlier today, I saw Juanita. I serve on the Environmental Policy Committee of the Massachusetts Municipal Association, and Juanita gave a presentation that was terrific earlier today. So I just want to give her a shout out while I have the opportunity.
Okay, who else?
That sounds like a lot of work for four people. How is that going to happen with four people and 2,100 carts every week for 8 weeks?
So it's 3-hour blocks, and on the specific route day, we just start at 7 a.m. and walk the route for 3 hours. We are still working to finalize those details, and next week we're actually starting to walk the route and kind of pin down, because it's dependent on the area, you know, kind of how close each household is to one another. Some neighborhoods are tighter than others, so that's why the numbers are approximate, and we will definitely be timing that out ahead of time.
When you lift the lid, I'm thinking, I'm sorry.
No, you're fine.
When you lift the lid, is it obvious right away? I mean, the lids are kind of deep. I'm just wondering
Yeah, so, I mean, we're not poking around, we're not touching anything. It's just a completely visual inspection. So it is entirely possible that something looks perfectly fine from the top, but what we're trying to catch is the folks that are heavily contaminating their carts.
What are some of the most obvious?
So the biggest problem, the biggest problem item for recyclers is plastic bags. And that comes in two forms. It's either people putting their recyclables in a plastic bag inside their house, picking that bag up or tying it, taking it up to their cart. That is definitely going to be obvious, and it's one of the biggest problems. And then the other is just plastic bags loose. I know here we have a plastic bag ban, but there's still plenty of plastic bags that end up in the recycling stream. So you get a plastic bag, say, from Subway, and it says, recycle this bag, and it doesn't say how. And so most people take that method, and then they put it into their curbside recycling. And it causes problems at the facility where our recycling goes to get sorted.
Okay.
I just didn't know what this on the street is public. I mean, is that still for garbage too?
It does.
I mean, it's better.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. So at what point will we know where these blocks are? Because it would be good information for us to have before the call about that one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I'm on West Ham Street, so yeah, my in-laws are major violators. I mean, so they just don't know. They walk there, they just throw whatever.
And that's actually.
You know, and I just saw them throw in the couch home. They're not going to.
Yeah.
I think they take away their green can and then they solve the problem. But so also the problem we see on West Ham Street is very common. I get a lot of emails and calls on it. And I'm talking to Harry about the other day. That people come by and you get these nighttime dumpers, they just throw stuff in the can. And we get a lot of them on wartime too. And they don't care which can they're putting in. You know, they just drive them by, their landscapers, they're the pick on the four folks, but they just people with trash. They people trying to get rid of things, they're looking for cans that are empty.
Yeah.
And we get a lot of that. So some of that you may find, but it's just too good to know the blocks ahead of time, not that a lot of them scare people, but. And I think a lot of it is the information piece, just so people don't know. I mean, I remember what the plastic bags were about a year ago. But, so I'm imagining that West Newton might be a big violator simply because we're closer to Hannaford and Market Basket, and our people are more likely to shop over there and spend the money down Whole Foods. You know, so, and then we come home with plastic bags, so it'd be a big thing. And then the other thing I look at, from the financial perspective that we're looking at, so also, I know it's good to be green, and the council will excuse me on this one, but at some point,
not
you guys
did
it.
Not
that. No, okay, I said you're a poison. That's true. But at some point, there's a cost issue. Now, I know when they build the contract in, they build the contract in with the reality that cities can't make it, so they want to make a cushion for themselves. So that's how a lot of the contracts are built. They say, okay, if you're perfect, here's your rate. But since you're not going to be perfect, here's the rate, then you have a lot of violations, and the cost is going to go down. But there's also a certain percentage of waste that's going just to the real estate and stuff now that's not actually being recycled. So, in some cases, we're charging our residents more, we're paying more money as a city. And I know it's kind of like not popular to say, but if it's not going to be recycled, why are we paying for recycle when we could just throw it trash and not pay that extra city? So, I don't mind if it's actually being recycled. But if we could sit down with our contractor and say, what are you actually recycling? I'm all for that, but when it comes down to we're adding cost to the residents, and the cost to the residents being added, but the stuff actually being sent to the realtor, then that would be good information to have, because why are we paying this extra? And we're paying extra because when you write the contract, they probably know it's going to be met. You know, there's a lot of contract negotiators, that's whoever the negotiator should know that when they're negotiating with these big companies, that they're factoring in that you're not going to be perfect. And they're giving us the perfect rate. I'm in a commission-based job. I always been commissioned. Those are the commissions you never get. And there's always been the reality commission where most people are. And that's the same thing with a contract, is they're giving you a perfect full contract, and then they give you penalties on top of it. So if we're in a situation where our contract is designed that we can't actually get to a good place, we need to look at that going forward. Are we up for contract with State Financial and all that?
Not until 2020.
Yeah. 2020. So we've got a year to work on that.
Yeah.
That's my point. So there's a lot of this is more of my question is not just about, so I understand this, and I think it's valuable to education. I don't know. I know you tried to stick with this a few years ago. I'm not sure how that works. everybody, so it works for some people.
So I'll address both.
Okay, so if you can continue with any of that, you probably have better information than I do.
Your question. So the specific neighborhood, the street, as soon as we have that finalized, we will be notifying counselors. We want to get ahead of the communication on this as much as possible. And so that will be coming in the next week and a half. Regarding the illegal dumping that you're describing, that's not something that I have heard of as being a common practice. That's not to say that it has, it doesn't happen. And certainly we will, so with the curbside auditing, we have an internal process right now. So what happens is right now it's in our waste management contract for a driver, if they see a recycling bin that the lid is pushed up and there is a bag of recycling sitting inside of it, they are tasked in our contract to enforce our city ordinance to have the right things in the cart. And so what happens now is that the driver gets out of the truck, they put a yellow sticker on the bin, they call it into their dispatch center. At the end of the day, their dispatch center sends us a list of any of the non-compliant violations that they noted that day. We send that resident a letter, and in the intention is to educate them, to just say, hey, this is observed, this is incorrect, please change it. So we will still be following up with that, and there is always a line on there that says, if you receive this and you believe that it's not accurate, please let us know. And so should someone, basically somebody has a way to say, this wasn't me, or, this is known to happen on my street, and, we would address that, and there's a way out for the resident, for them to not get it varies from month to month, but we've had a month as high as 500. And then the last point, regarding the material, so I think what you're talking about is with this current market crisis, talking about material that is being recovered at the curb for recycling, going to the sorting center, and then not having a place to go. Recyclable material. So currently that's not happening for most materials. It's not to say that it never happens, and especially this year, there have been times where it has happened. I would say the vast majority of material is still getting recycled. The problem is that the material is getting, it's more difficult for the hauler or the processor to find a market for the material. When the market is found, they're getting a lower price than they did before. But the material is ultimately still getting recycled. And I would say, in the grand scheme of things, environmentally speaking, it is still a more preferred method of management than sending anything to a waste energy facility. Regarding the, so I think what you were, I guess one other thing that I want to say about that is in Massachusetts, there are some communities right now that have fees for processing or tipping fees for recyclables that are higher than their tonnage rates for trash. And so this argument comes up of, well, if it's not cheaper to recycle, then why are we doing it? One, in Massachusetts, there's statewide waste ban, so we are legally bound to divert that material away from disposal, or at least empower our residents to be able to do that. There are some municipalities who have pulled away their curbside recycling programs and only done drop-off programs, so they're technically still offering an option. In the next 10 to 20 years, Massachusetts is facing a major crunch on capacity for disposal space. And so it's definitely already moving in the direction of long-distance hauling of our waste. Right now there is a vendor that has been coming to meetings and talking with the state about hauling trash by train from Massachusetts to Ohio. And so the environmental impact, the cost of that, all of those things are just going to continue to go up. The recycling industry forecasts that the pain that the industry is feeling right now from this policy change in China will last for roughly the next 12 to 24 months. But after that, the those markets will rebound. And so we do feel in the long term that investing in recycling education and reducing contamination now is still the right thing to do.
I spent a few hours one day, a little while back, at the poppy industry facility where they sat on the line where they did the, you know, recycle and they dump it on one end and the people actually were there picking stuff off in their stands and their magnets. So it's kind of fascinating how it all works. And, but I also, at the time, I also met with the hobby people and they explained me how the brokers had to work to try and sell the recyclables. So they had a lot of their companies with brokers sitting in there, actively on the phones and on the computers trying to sell their stuff. Whatever they could. A wide variety of things. So, you know, bigger things, bigger items that they found or whatever maybe. So thank you. That's good, all good information.
All right, so I just wanted to make a couple of comments. I have no issue with the financial piece. I think everybody understands that recycling, we need to recycle it just for the environmental reasons that have been pointed out to us on many occasions. So I don't care what is more expensive. It's still the right thing to do. I think we should have a robust program. I'm all for education, but when we get to the point, and I understand legally that when it's out on the curb, it's fair game, but I don't think most people in the city view it that way. And I think that people are going to be pretty upset with what they feel is a version of the city trespassing on their property and their stuff. And so there's two things. Number one, I don't really want you and the other people that you mentioned spending that kind of time out walking around Second Barrel. I don't think that's a great use of your time. I would think that we would pound the areas that we know with education after educational piece after educational piece before we went to the, what I think is the extreme of picking up people's barrel thoughts. So, the one thing I also want to be assured of, are you considering using anyone other than the people that you mentioned to do this work?
No.
Okay. Because there's some talk out there that he might try to get high school kids involved, and I just think that that would be a disaster.
No, that has not been part of the discussion.
Okay. So I wanted to make sure of that. I think you got to, first, I also worry about, I don't know how it is for you guys, but I get surprised sometimes by squirrels and other animals, and I can just, it's only a matter of time before one of you go popping up and you get some squirrel coming out flying at you. So it's gonna happen.
Yeah.
They're in my, but you can just first of all chew away and they create a hole. And then I kick the barrels like nobody's business because I've been surprised too many times when I've gone out there. Yeah. So or a raccoon. So I'm just worried about the things that can go wrong, and I also think that you're gonna end up antagonizing people, and I think you're gonna actually have with some people the opposite effect, where they're gonna get so ticked off that the city's going around just looking at their junk, and you know making these notes that they're gonna do whatever they can to hide it and to stick it, and so I think that that's a mistake. So I'm not going to vote for this, as long as that's part of it. And I'll make the case of, you know, as to why, but I think that it goes too far. I would take the money and I educate people, send them as many notes and whatever in those areas, as long as if you continue to have, and hopefully the education works and the numbers go down. It's never going to be perfect. We've known that from the beginning, that
we were going to have this problem. And I get notes, I get an email from a woman in Auburndale, like every 4 to 6 months, when she sends out this blog on the Auburndale listserv about how the city gets charged X amount of dollars. So I'm certainly aware of what's going on, and I know that it doesn't look good, but I just think this is going too far. Well, anybody else before Jim has a chance to speak?
Can I comment on your comments? So again, I would point to the fact that there was a lot of research done in developing this program by MassDEC in combination with a national nonprofit that is dedicated to expanding recycling access for people. They did a pilot here in Massachusetts with 4 different municipalities, and they tried different models and different variations of this system. And their control was a program where they did do robust education to individual households, including door hangers, citywide mailing, and kind of the no curbside piece of it. And the results were striking and very telling that there was no noticeable improvement for the concerted educational effort. But there was noticeable improvement for even a municipality that did 1 to 2 weeks of the curbside inspection.
Okay, Emily?
I'm ready to move it whenever, but also, as I said, I did this 25 years ago. It was very effective because who's going to look at something left in your door? No one looks at that. But when they don't take your recycling, and then this is why, Try to, you get recycling, you
gotta
follow rules. You don't follow rules, you don't get your recycling
success. So, I mean, how does that work? Do they, if they won't take the recycling?
So, the first week of the program is essentially an informational, educational piece. And so, anyone who is found with some type of contamination in their cart, notice that you put this in here, please resolve it, and we will come back to collect it. The first week, we will still collect everybody's cart. After that, we will be rejecting carts at the curb.
Okay.
As you should be. And then the other thing I just want to say is that we just heard that the waste management guys, Gal, is already doing this, and people haven't been freaking out as far as, from the privacy of him within their staff.
Well, he's not looking in there, but what they do is, if your bin's open and you got a big plastic bag surrounding, other bags, it's pretty, it's clear that that should not be there. So they're not going around popping lids.
It's not all that different, though. You still kind of.
I do think it's going to be, some people are going to say, what's Big Brother doing? Checking out my garbage. I mean, they're going to think that it's going too far, but maybe people will love it. I don't know.
Well, maybe people listen to me. Someone's always going to complain about something, but well, for the overall good, I think it makes a lot of sense for that.
Yeah, that's just one question. Well, literally, you just put a bag for trash and they use an open bin for recyclables. So it's pretty obvious when somebody's in violation. But so my question, though, going to confidential comment, does your grant require curbside audit?
Yeah.
Well, that's something
So the grant requires you to go out there and pull the dog?
Correct. It is a prescriptive program from MassDEC, and you needed to agree to all of the steps of the program to receive the award.
Okay. Any other comments?
Can I ask a question?
Sure. What's your name, just for the record?
Carol Connelly.
Okay, Carol.
Did you when you say recycling, you're not talking bins anymore?
Correct.
Okay. I see you talking to the
contract. No, we want everybody to be using track bags. In the blue cart, we do want
those.
Definitely.
No, plastic bags can go in the blue
cart. Yes.
Yeah,
they are
highly encouraged
and desirable for a lot of reasons.
I do that. Very good. So like you're coming here. they do this in Ward A. They check out each other's trash. So if you want to do it up there, perfectly fine. What are you talking about? There was a big campaign controversy, remember? In one of your races, somebody checked out, was checking out, didn't they check out somebody's trash and filed a complaint?
That was actually my father's race in the
70s. No, it wasn't. No, it was well after that.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's your brother.
No, there was someone looking in my father's trash.
Somebody was looking in somebody's trash.
Yeah. I'm just going to vote for this. I think it's great. I think the public awareness is important, I think, and I don't know if a week is enough, and obviously the DAB, not that anything, but anyway, as much as you can get out there, as you said it to us, we'll share it, but I think it's important for people to know, first of all, it'll get people doing more attention to recycling, but it will also help you not get shot if you're on the green coming. So I think the awareness part is important, but I'll move it through.
Okay. All right, ready to vote?
Mm-hmm.
All those in favor? Okay. 5. Opposed? 1. So we're established. 5-1. All right, thank you, Winnie.
Thank you.
456-18, around the mayor requesting authorization to accept and expend a grant of $3,435,000 from Massachusetts Water Resources Authority and authorization to borrow $1,145,000 as part of the MWRA Industry Loan Grant Program for the purpose of funding sewer improvements. Sir.
Good evening. from going from trash to food. The Mass Water Resources Authority has another loan grant program of $100 million, their Phase 11 loan grant program. Newton's flow share is about 4.5%, so we got a total of $4,580,000 of this Phase 11 loan grant program. It is 75% grant and 25% loan. So City Council needs to approve the loan grant so that we can accept the money. The loan distribution is in November 15th, plus or minus time frame. So coming to you tonight for acceptance of the loan grant so that we can actually receive the money and put it into the MMDCT account, and we can go ahead and spend that money. We propose to spend that money on our Phase 7 of the sewer program, the sewer II removal program. It will be spent on Phase 7. Phase 6 is another docket item coming up. We're ready to bid Phase 6, so this actual loan grant will go towards Phase 7.
Several of us have been through this on other days. It's obviously a great program. So.
Yeah, if I may note, this is phase 11 Mass Water Resources. They've also authorized a Phase 12 and also a Phase 13. Phase 12 will be 75% grant, 25% loan. Phase 13 will be 100% loan. But they've already been authorized. But you have to spend Phase 7, Phase 11 before you can spend Phase 12.
Yeah.
Interest free. The loan part is interest fee payable 1% per year over 10 years.
Yeah. Questions?
No.
Okay. Somebody want to move it?
I'll move it.
Okay. Do you have any questions on this? Okay. All those in favor? Okay. 457-18, around the mayor requesting authorization to appropriate $232,000 for bonded indebtedness to fund the purchase of a new 2018 Elgin Pelican street sweeper.
Okay, Public Works has vastly increased their street sweeping. We actually sweep year-round, barring snowstorms. This is not only for the cleanliness of the street, but it's a major component of our stormwater permitting process. Our new stormwater permit requires us to sweep streets. It also requires us to have a phosphorus removal program, and street sweeping is a big aid in helping us remove unwanted phosphorus from the
from the road before it gets into the stormwater system. This unit replaces a unit, a 2002 unit, and this unit has a 10-year life expectancy.
Why are there two prices on this one?
I think there's two items. There's a backhoe and a backhoe, and there's a backhoe and a backhoe.
The policy is getting richer.
So, if I understand it, so the Department of Public Works asked for $240,000, but I quoted to $230,000.
Yeah, that's right. It's the quote version.
So
yeah.
All right, I just see one item, so I don't know, you must be maybe looking at it. Maybe I might need to. Okay, so the one that's on the dock at the 232 is what is the right one? Correct. Okay, any other questions? Mayor Motion, Councilor Wilson, all those in favor? All right, 6 to 0. 458-18 is an honor of the mayor requesting authorization to appropriate $149,000 from water and debt in this to fund the purchase of a new 590S backhoe for the Public Works Department.
Okay, this backhoe is for the Highway Division, the Streets Division. The backhoe obviously digs trenches, sidewalk and asphalt repairs, stump removal, and also assists in snow plowing operations. It replaces a 1995 backhoe. So it's long, long overdue, and it, this unit has also a 10-year life expectancy.
Just one question.
Yes,
I should ask this in the last one too. Are you installing this equipment, the old equipment? Or is it fast? Is it
the old equipment, the old backhoe, the old skeleton?
Yeah. Because I know the police department sells their cars now, they get money at installing it.
So if we are,
We have a whole surplus. Okay, that's all. We're going to get into that at the last item. I'm okay. All right, so you making a motion? I'll make the motion. All right, all those in favor? All right, 6 to 0. Topic page 3, 459-18, the honor of the mayor requesting authorization to appropriate $2,200,000 from bonded indebtedness to fund the construction of the sewer system inflow and infiltration capital improvement program project number 6, located in the areas of Newton Center, Newtonville, Northampton, and Chestnut Hill, approved 5-0 MPS.
Okay, so this part, this sewer infiltration inflow removal project is ready to bid. The actual cost estimate is $4.3 million, but we have existing funds and accounts to make up the difference. We're only asking tonight for the $2.2 million in bonded indebtedness to make up the funds that we need to bid the entire Phase 6 project. So we have existing funds already. We just need supplemented with the $2.2 million bond.
So, so how does it work? So projects, Project Area 6 is where bonding and where you have other money. Just Project Area 7 where basically you have either the grant or the interest-free loan. So how does that work? How does we pick and choose? Does the state tell us? Does the MWRA tell us what we have?
No, it's more the loan grant that we receive from Mass Water Resources doesn't necessarily cover the entire bid package of the area that we're trying to tackle. So we do need to bond some of that bid package funding with city funds. because, for instance, the $4.5 million that you just approved may not cover Project Area 7. We may need more to cover the project area because we're so aggressive.
But, no, but I guess I wasn't clear. We're not getting any kind of aid from the MWRA or some other state program for Project Area Number 6. That's
correct because we had expended our Phase 9 and Phase 10 funds on Project Area 3, 4, and 5.
That's my question.
We didn't miss a phase. Unlike the water main program, sewer main program phases are not annual. They're random.
Okay.
So it is once every 2 years, once every 3 years.
We didn't miss a phase.
We didn't miss a phase.
Okay.
All right.
Any other questions? Motion?
Motion.
Motion by Council Wright. All those in favor? 6-0. 474-18. Your Honor, the Mayor requesting authorization to appropriate $250,640 and authorize a general obligation borrowing of an equal amount for the purpose of funding the purchase of a new front-end loader for the public works department. And this is approved 5-0.
So this is the front end loader for the street division. It loads material, salt, gravel, stone, loam. It's also used for snow plowing operations. It's replacing a 1998 unit, and it also has a 10-year life expectancy.
All right. So do me a favor. Go deep in your packets and find this memo from Winco Machinery, so you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
The one dated
August 2nd.
August
2nd. So don't we have any requirement to buy another? Okay.
Alright, so here's the question. if you look at the additional equipment included, and you get down to the selling price, you see $258,140.
Yeah.
And then you have your trade options. Those are the traders. And I know that there's some ancient stuff there, but I have been contacted by a couple of people who swear that the 1998 Volvo L120C loader and C152 trenching bucket worth more than double that entire trade allowance. And why isn't the city doing their own auction? I thought the commissioner would be here. I mean,
he could make it.
Alright, so here's my request. I would suggest that we approve the money, but I would like you to be open to the idea of at least trying this once. We're not going to lose money. We're getting a lousy $7,500.
Yeah.
And if you look at, I'm told that you can replace, like a motor in one of these compressors, and you got yourself a pretty decent piece of equipment. And you've got, you know, several different compressors in there. And I just think that maybe, because as Councilor Cody mentioned, we used to get, you know, like pennies on the dollar for when we traded in our police vehicles in particular. And now we go to auction, and we get a decent chunk of change when we do that. Like, you know, like a, like 20 times what we were getting from dealers and stuff. So I think it's, you know, I don't know if these people know what they're talking about, but they're saying that there's contractors even here in the city
who buy it.
They mentioned two names who would be interested in bidding on this stuff. And so I think we ought to at least consider it. And either it works and we make some extra money, or we say, you know, we invested this time and we've got all this junk on our hands we've got to get rid of. So can you have that conversation?
So I just got a comment. So I came out of the Marine Corps where we were set up for cannibalizing our equipment. So we gave every part count, like 10 times over. I think these bombardiers that were basically like something good out there and they were given away. Can we cannibalize those for the bombardiers we bought in the last few years? Or it can't be that far different. Some of the parts I know would be very different, but they don't
I mean, like, to your point, people would buy that stuff at CVS.
Well, I'm sure if we ask that question tonight and certain people were here, is Ron and Ann still working?
Yes, sir. So maybe if we can get that question answered right
away. So I think Ron would say, and probably the commissioner, that the parts of the 1993 Bombardier are not going to be compatible with the Bombardiers that we have today. They'll be the answer. Okay? They'll have the answer.
We can get to the answer.
But I don't want to answer. I just want people to be a little open-minded and to consider trying, instead of getting $7,500, pay the full price and see what happens if we would have opted this stuff off. That's all I'm asking.
So many Chrysler to get more money than that. You would. Equipment guys will buy this stuff.
All right.
Okay.
Other,
so we get the vote on it?
Mr. Chairman, do you want to then amend this to authorize the 258?
Yeah, I would, and then you guys can decide. Because if you decide, if you're convinced by, you know, the other people that, you know, that in public works or whatever, or on public works, that it's a necessary full commission, and you don't want to do it, then you would just obviously spend the 250. Is that okay with everybody?
Mm-hmm.
And just let's at least give the flexibility, but I would like you to seriously, at least try one. So I'm going to ask for a motion to amend the item to 258-140 with the understanding that we're doing that in case the administration would like to move forward with auctioning this equipment off. So they're going to need the full amount, with the $7,500 included.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so that motion is made. Are there any other comments? Okay, all those in favor? As amended, 6-0. Thank you. Okay, we're getting there. Last item, 475-18, Your Honor, the Mayor requesting authorization to appropriate and spend $203,975 from the Municipal Federal Grant Fund 18. Authorize the appropriation of $300,000 and authorize the general obligation borrowing an equal amount for the purpose of funding the Hammond Brook Culvert Replacement Project. Again, this is approved 5-0. Yeah.
Okay, so these funds would be put toward the construction and installation of a new 24-inch culvert at Hammond Brook. This is the culvert that collapsed prior to the historic rains of March 2010, where the Green Line running parallel to the brook, actually the Green Line foundation, the foundations of the Green Line collapsed and shut down the Green Line for quite a while until they could repair it. The culvert was a collapsed 24-inch culvert from Hammond Pond, which leads to Hammond Brook, which goes parallel to railroad tracks and actually comes out here at City Hall. So the intent is to replace the collapsed 24-inch culvert with a new reinforced concrete culvert, and that's what these funds are essentially going for.
Good. Questions?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Motion? Motion by Councilman. All those in favor? Before we leave, I didn't want to spring this on you because I didn't say anything to you ahead of time, but is there a way without, I mean, we used to get some information about the fruits of our labor with the, you know, relining of our pipes, our sewer pipes and so forth, and doing all the work that we're doing. Is there some way that we could get us something just to give us a sense of how we're doing?
Councilor Danberg asked a similar question in public facilities last week. We have some information that I just received as I was leaving the office this afternoon. I didn't want to give it to you yet, but if the information is correct, we're going to put that in the Friday packet for you all, for both Public Facilities Committee and Finance Committee, as the question was. The question is, we're spending all this money on sewer II removal, how we're doing? And we do have an answer. The commissioner and I just wanted to check it. It was raw data from Ted Girardi, but the commissioner and I wanted to check it before we gave it to you. So we have it. I just need to check it.
And besides the actual data,
yeah,
so that will give us information on
flow and stuff like that. Don't we do some kind of physical inspecting after work is done? I'm not sure that we do every inch of pipe, but we. It's not like we just take the contract and work
correct
word for it that they've fully relined it or whatever they did.
Correct. Part of the program is for our consulting engineers to do a follow-up. After the construction is completed, they do a follow-up flow analysis to determine how much infiltration inflow was removed from that targeted area based on the construction that took place. So yeah, that also is taking place. We have that data from Weston and Sampson. We just need to compile it so it's comprehensible. It's all raw data. We need to make it presentable. So we have that data too as well. The other proof of the pudding is we get monthly flow data from Mass Water Resources, and in previous years, Newton was the outlier as far as flow percentage.
Right.
Now we are much more toward the middle of the pack, and we're actually doing very well as far as our flow share in comparison with the surrounding communities. So that's another telltale that we are getting some bang for the buck. The money is, we're getting a return on the investment, if you will, on the money being spent on sewer II flow removal, because we are, way ahead of the pace now of the surrounding communities regarding infiltration and flow removal based on flow share.
But our consultants don't do any kind of visual inspection.
Yes, they do. They do a visual follow up after construction.
So it's not just the flow.
TV cameras, sensors, but we're using the cameras as we're doing the work, as construction for team. But they do TV cameras, they do flow analysis after construction is completed to determine, how successful that construction level is.
Do they ever say, you didn't do a very good job here, it needs to be...
Not yet. There's very few contractors.
Very well.
Very few contractors who do this, and the contractors do it very well, and they're not going to remain in business. So we haven't had any major issues. Yeah, one or two lines may have possibly collapsed, but that has nothing. That's just the sealant, the glue, if you will, and the temperature and all that stuff. But we really haven't had any major problems with the construction or the installation of this product.
Good.
Well,
two quick things. When you look at
I don't know if we have that tonight.
So we have it that day.
during the budget phase to remember. But I want to know those numbers and the percentages, and you guys have come back with a lot of information. So it took 24, 25.
Yep. It's yeah. Still a lot higher. Yeah.
It's still too high, but that's what my concern was.
We're not taking the progress there that we are with sewer. Mm-hmm. Right? It's, we're still.
But I think. Are we below
20? No, not in the water, not.
All right, we're adjourned at 9:02. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. What are you saying about the progress?